Good morning and welcome to our weekly radio teleconference. I apologize for missing last week, but now we're back on schedule. I just want to talk about two things today. First is what's happening on the Senate floor, and the second is to talk a little bit about our energy prices and the crisis that we're facing right now with regard to it. Today on the Senate floor, we're going to have another vote, a similar vote to the one that we held earlier this June. With regard to cloture, meaning an effort to force a final vote on a proposal to offset temporary extensions of current law with regard to what we call the tax extenders, or with regard to business tax policies, things like the research and development tax credit and the like. To set the stage for this, these tax policies that we are talking about right now are already part of current law. They were adopted back in 2001 and 2003 as a part of the tax packages that were passed at that time. However, because of the procedural way in which we had to move forward at that time, all of the measures in that legislation had to have an expiration date, a sunset date. And these taxes are scheduled now, these tax relief measures are scheduled to expire if Congress does not extend them. There's really no debate, no significant disagreement about the fact that these tax policies should be continued. They are critical for the strength and vibrancy of our economy, particularly for small businesses throughout the country. And the real debate focuses on whether we should increase taxes in some other part of the economy simply because we are extending the current law on these tax extenders. There's a big difference between the two parties on this matter, and the key difference is that the proposal before us will have significant tax increases attached to it in an effort to so-called offset these tax relief measures. But again, I point out that these are measures that are already part of current law, so we are being asked essentially to raise taxes in order to keep taxes at their current level. And many of us, myself included, strongly disagree with that. I intend to vote against cloture. I expect that the vote will be very similar to the one we had earlier in June, where cloture was not allowed. And hopefully, if we can get to that point where this effort to raise taxes yet once again in this Congress is stopped, we can then move forward and negotiate a proper resolution to the effort to maintain our current tax policies with regard to our economy. Now, the other issue that I wanted to discuss briefly is energy prices. As many of you may know, on Monday, June 16th, I announced an effort to give Idahoans a direct voice in how to resolve our problems that we're dealing with regard to the high gas prices, diesel prices, and other energy prices. In a press release that I sent out, I asked Idahoans who were willing to participate to send in their personal stories about high energy prices and their ideas about how we should resolve this situation. And I can tell you that the response has already been tremendous. I have sitting in front of me a stack about 3 or 4 inches high of responses that people have already made. And I'd like to just share a few of the things that people from Idaho are saying about our fuel prices. One is, today we had to make the difficult choice of putting fuel in the car or grocery shopping. You see, we needed milk, bread, and some other staples, and we needed a tank of gas. Each purchase was going to amount to around $80. And so we had to choose one or the other. So we gassed up the car and decided to try to make it until payday with the food that we had at home. I've never felt so sick or downtrodden at the one or the other kind of option that we face today. Another Idahoan wrote in, it has mostly affected my family. However, because of my 5 children, 7 years and younger, can no longer feel free to visit their dying grandmother and grandfather just 3.5 hours away. It used to cost just $20 in gas for a visit there and back. Not a big deal. Now it costs $60. Another Idahoan writes, almost every day I have a contractor tell me of a job that got put on hold or canceled due to the high price of moving dirt. Most of the increase in excavating prices is directly related to diesel. These fuel prices are putting people out of work. Another, who is involved with the Eastern Idaho Community Action Partnership in Idaho Falls, writes, since the end of March, we have received requests for help from families we have never seen before. Families must meet the same income criterion that is required for the standard LIHEAP program. What this tells us is that families have been able to make do until now, but because of high fuel costs and higher grocery prices, they are now not able to meet all of their obligations. We are seeing more requests for food boxes than in previous years. And again, these are just a few samples. I literally have a list or a stack here of 3 or 4 inches high of one sheet per response of Idahoans just with what has come in over the weekend. Now, why have I chosen to try to ask Idahoans to become involved in this process? Well, first and foremost, we must develop a rational energy policy here in Congress. And we have had vote after vote after vote in terms of how we should approach things and how we should move forward, in which Congress, particularly the Senate, has ended up in a stalemate. There are those who think that the only way we can proceed with this, it seems, is to have more and more conservation efforts and stop using as much fuel and energy, but not engage in production of our own resources to try to become less dependent on foreign petroleum and not try to diversify our energy portfolio. There are others, like myself, who believe that while we must focus on conservation, and conservation must be a key part of our energy policy, we also must diversify our energy policy, and we must begin using our own production capacity so that we can become less dependent on the whims of OPEC nations and others who would drive up the price of gasoline. And as we get Idahoans involved, telling their story here in Congress, it's my hope that these messages will help my colleagues recognize the dire pressures that our families across this country are facing. These pressures are not just being faced by Idahoans. And secondly, it's my hope that Idahoans will weigh in very strongly in favor of the solutions they want Congress to implement. There are a lot of ideas on the table. I've named just a few. But the bottom line is that Americans must begin telling their representatives in the Senate and in the House of Representatives whether they want us to engage in a more aggressive energy policy that seeks to utilize our own domestic resources and seeks to diversify and expand our energy resources. With that, let me stop. And I understand Bill Scott is not on today. Is that correct? I'll assume that is correct. Next is Jason Ford.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I guess talking along those lines, because you hear like one side wants to drill and not tax, the other side wants to tax, but you're not hearing a lot about the refineries and how they're kind of being held back. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about that.
Yes, you know, it's been decades since we've really had any significant expansion of our infrastructure with regard to oil refineries. And most of the oil, if not all of the oil, that is being utilized in our refineries now comes from sources outside the United States. What we need to do is to increase the regulatory flexibility and decrease the tax burdens so that those who are involved in petroleum production, whether it's exploration and drilling or whether it is the refining, can invest in the kind of infrastructure that will help us to build out our capacity in the United States to meet our own needs. And so one piece of the energy solution, in my opinion, is to make sure that we change our law, that we refine and improve our law so that the regulatory system in which we operate and the tax policies which we apply to our producers will encourage and incentivize the increased production of U.S. supplies.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Jason. Next is Dave Plourd. Dave, are you on today? Well, all right, let's move on to Leslie. Leslie?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Really glad to see you making this effort to get public comment and glad to hear what people are saying. This has become so all important, especially in the West. We have long distances to drive. Do you think, as this focus is so focused, is this taking emphasis off other things that people should be paying attention to?
Well, to a certain extent, I do believe that the gas prices and the high energy prices are diverting attention from other issues. But I'd have to say that Congress is very capable of working on many issues at the same time. Although you may see a specific issue dominate on the floor of the U.S. Senate for a week or two of debate, such as the tax policy or the health care policy or the energy policies that we've had on the floor in the last few weeks, the bottom line is that even though a matter may not be formally being debated on the floor, there is always aggressive work being done with regard to committee action or even individual action between senators and the like as they try to move forward in the negotiations and the give-and-take process that helps us bring forward successful bipartisan legislation. So although I do believe that the the energy crisis, if you will, has diverted Congress's attention in some contexts in the sense of what might be on the floor of the Senate. I actually don't think that it has slowed down the ability for us to act on other issues.
On the business tax policies,
yes.
The relief that's about to expire, were there offsets before? And if so, how did that work before? Now you're saying that they want to increase taxes to make up for the offsets. Was there an offset going on before this latest round?
No, there was never an offset on any of the taxes that we have either raised or lowered in previous years until this Congress. And let me explain that. Congress has for some time now, I don't remember how long, but it's been at least 10 or maybe even 15 years, Congress has operated under a rule called PAYGO, which simplified means that if you propose any new federal entitlement spending, you must pay for it by either reducing other spending or by increasing revenue so that you keep the budgetary impact neutral. But that requirement has only applied to new spending until this Congress. In this Congress, the new majority changed the PAYGO rule so that it continues to apply to some parts of the entitlement system, although the rule has been waived more than it's been honored with regard to spending. But they also applied the rule to tax relief. So that, now think about this, the rule now says that in order to reduce taxes, you must also increase taxes. And so the effort of changing this rule, which is a brand new rule that Congress has never operated under before, is one that says that we can never have a lower tax rate than we have today. We may change it around. We may reduce taxes on one category of people, but if we do so, we have to increase taxes on another category of people or in one category of economic activity versus another category of economic activity. And I personally very strongly disagree with that notion. I believe that tax policy changes, the proper tax policy changes, can have very strong stimulative effects on the economy, and that we will make up for any lost revenue to the Treasury by increased economic activity and strengthening and making our economy more vibrant. But the answer to your question is, until this Congress, there has never been a need to essentially increase taxes every time you try to reduce taxes.
And who made up the rule?
Well, that would be a rule that was adopted by the Budget Committee and then passed by the floor of the Senate in this Congress. Now, I will tell you that it was a party line vote, essentially. There may have been a few who switched it at the edges in each party, though I don't think there were many who changed. And it was the new Democratic majority who changed the rule. And I have to indicate that I believe the reason that they did so was, as you may recall, when we passed the tax relief in 2001 and 2003, it was passed against very strong opposition. And there were all the arguments being made at that time that it was a tax cut for the wealthy and so forth. And, of course, and you've heard me before say that that is not the case. It was a tax cut for every American, and the largest percentage of the tax relief went into the lower and middle income categories. But nevertheless, there was strong opposition to it, strong enough that it was not able to be passed over the filibuster except through a procedural maneuver that required that it have a 10-year lifespan. And so now that that 10-year lifespan is starting to come up, the rules have been changed by the new majority to require that if we don't allow these tax cuts to expire, then we have to increase taxes elsewhere. It's just another way to put a burden or a hurdle in front of this tax relief. And let me just also say one other thing. Today we are talking about sort of one sliver of this tax policy, that is the business tax relief that was provided in those measures. But in the future, we are going to see the rest of these tax policies expire, and that will be things like the elimination of the estate and inheritance tax. That will be the reduction in every single American's individual income tax rates. That will be a number of the things like the reduction of the capital gains and dividends taxes that were passed by Congress that have benefited all Americans in their pension funds and so forth, and many other things. And so we will face the same debate as increases in everyone's taxes come up and start to happen. It's just that we're starting to face it first here with these business taxes.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Are Bill and Dave on yet? Okay, any other questions? All right, thank you very much. Bye.
Thanks.